to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. The date is July 27th, 2009. Before I introduce our guests, I'd just like to say that I feel that every president since JFK has been a puppet to some degree. I also feel that the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights is hanging on by the thinnest of thread. And the two main last presidents, being G.W., George Bush, and also Obama, are two people that have caused massive damage to these two great institutions. And with their illegal wars, massive illegal payoffs to the banksters, and corporate corruption. And I feel that both of them should be held accountable for the exact same actions. Now, with this said, our guest for today is a Christian patriot and a survivor of the Hitler Youth Movement, who was forced to be a part of this movement as a child. In 1943, he joined the German army and fought on the Eastern Front. Also, our guest has been a member of the American-Mexican Chamber of Commerce, and he has a university degree in economics. And his name is Hilmer von Campe. Hello, Hilmer.
Good afternoon, Reg. Correct? Is that the way you pronounce your name?
Yeah, Reginald or Reg is just fine.
Reg, yeah.
And the first thing I'd like to ask you about, now, people from my generation and just prior to my generation, we only know what happened during the Nazi regime through, you know, reading about it on the internet or watching old videos and stuff like that. You actually lived through it. You saw this nightmare. You saw this darkness. Could you please tell our listening audience what happened to your family and people that you know prior to the Nazis showing up and then just after the Nazis showed up?
Yes, certainly. A lot of them, I can tell you our experience, how it was. Most of what I am writing about and what I am saying is what I learned afterwards when I asked myself, how was this possible? That's when bit by bit by bit by bit I learned the truth about what was doing this. Now, I was 7 years old when the Nazis took over. My father was a civil servant. He was about the equivalent to a county commissioner, with the difference that the county commissioner is being elected, whilst in Germany the area where he was an administrator, the commissioner is being appointed by the government. He is a civil servant. The Nazis, immediately when they had won the election on January 30th, established a second hierarchy parallel to the government hierarchy, and that was a party hierarchy of the National Socialist German Workers' Party. In other words, the Nazi stands for National Socialist, and not for national fascists. Fascism is something which is quite different from socialism. So the Nazis were socialists, and Stalin was a socialist. And do we have socialists here in power? Yes, we have. So that is one point I want to start with, because I hear it always in the television and in writing that people speak of fascism. Has nothing to do with fascism. And if anybody wants to ask me, I can explain why. Now, then my father was asked by the party, after they had established themselves, they asked him to become a member, and he refused. And so he was fired from his job. They couldn't fire him out of the civil servant for his contract, but he was pushed into the payment in the corner of our country. For us children, we didn't really realize what was happening. We moved into another city, we went into another school, and when I was 10 years old, that was a law which Hitler had made. Hitler made a law which annihilated the all youth organization except the Hitler Youth. That was the only youth organization which existed. He eliminated the the opposition parties in the German parliament, and he eliminated the trade unions. So he had civil, as far as the civil state was concerned, he had total power. And when he, in 1934, when the stormtroopers, the SA we called them, they had become quite a force inside the Nazi state. And the head was a fellow called Röhm. He was a homosexual, and he was a friend of one of the best, if not the best friends of Hitler. But he became a menace to Hitler's growing power, so Hitler decided to kill him. And he had him and 300 others, including one former chancellor, liquidated it over the night.
Was that the night of the long knives, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the night of the long knives. Yeah, that is correct. And that was the last point where there would have been a possibility to return. But we call that and there was no more return for the ordinary citizen to escape the rule of the totalitarian Nazis. The only one who could have done something. That was the army, that were the armed forces. They could have done it. But Hitler was had also, we had the three armed forces, branches, and then a top general who was a commander-in-chief. Hitler first took the command of the army by lying about the general who was in charge. Then the same thing happened with the commander-in-chief, and then the army was controlled by Hitler. And the oath of allegiance, which used to be for the constitution, that was the same for my father as a civil servant, was changed from the constitution. Everybody had to make his oath on the Führer, on the Hitler.
And also, what happens after the Nuremberg laws came in place in 1935 and Kristallnacht, the Night of Broken Glass, November 1938, had passed and become reality, how did the Jewish people, how were they treated within Nazi Germany?
Well, this is the most shameful story. As a German, I still am an American citizen, but I still have the responsibility for developments moral developments in Germany under the Nazis. That was really the meanest thing I could think of. They were bit by bit by bit. They were robbed from all their rights. And just imagine, and I have some friends who were survivors, Holocaust survivors, who gave me their inside story. And it was not just the Nazi government, it were also many of the German people who used the hatred of the Nazis towards the Jews. They used that for their enrichment on things which belonged to the Jews. So, for instance, the Jew could not cash in on a, if he had sent out an invoice, he was not allowed to follow up and demand the payment. Whilst on the other way around, he had to pay everything he bought. And so bit by bit, they were really diminished. And then they had to carry a Jewish star, making them known to the rest that they were Jews. And then was always a propaganda of the Nazis that they were very bad people. And this is what I bought as a boy. I didn't judge it. And my father then, when the Kristallnacht came, was already not with us anymore. He was advance guard for where he was. Translated to another job in another part of the country, and we followed him. But my parents couldn't talk to us about it anyway, because the Nazis always tried to have the children tell them what their parents thought and did, and that they couldn't risk.
So what you're talking about right now, I remember my wife and I, we spent almost 5 years in the United States, the end of September 2001, right up till middle of September 2006. And I remember there was one program that they tried to pass in the United States where they're going to set up this 1-800 number where people, ordinary citizens, were allowed to phone in and sort of like rat out their parents and rat out any citizen that doesn't march in a one unique line that their Patriot Act says that they have to march in. Was that along that lines?
Yeah, I think so. But only that it was forbidden, for instance, to listen to foreign radio stations, and there were two radio, one was BBC in London and the other was Bero Münster of Switzerland, who had German broadcasts, and it was forbidden by this the penalty of death if you were caught listening to these programs. And my father listened to it late at night, and we all remember the story when my sister, as a child, for whatever reason, came down and saw him on the radio. I think she didn't understand what he was doing, but my father was really shocked to his bones, because that could be the end of the family. Not just of my father himself, but their main concern was the integrity of their four children. We were four children, and that we were not corrupted by the Nazi ideology. That was their whole, my mother and my father, that was their battle. And I didn't really understand anything about it, but we children, also when I became bigger or older, we didn't like the people. They were mean-minded, small-minded, and always knew everything better. So we rejected them, not from the ideology, but the beings they were. My parents had to be very careful. They didn't like, in our family, we had the Nazis and the non-Nazis. My parents were the non-Nazis, and the Nazis were from the family of my mother, two officers, one general, highly decorated in the war. And at the end, the two parts didn't speak with each other anymore.
Yeah, and also I'd like to quickly point out, I did some research. I'm writing, as I was telling you earlier, I'm writing this fictional book that takes this child through the Holocaust, a Polish child. And what happens is, I remember one point about over in Poland, right after the Nazis invaded Poland, that they actually outlawed radios, and all the Polish people had to turn the radios in if they weren't considered of the right bloodline. And then they set these loudspeakers up all throughout Warsaw that they would transfer the news out through. And also they outlawed all media outlets, newspapers, everything had to be written in German. And I also saw the exact same thing happening in Nazi Germany. I ran across that stuff. Now, with that in mind, you also outlawing of the homeschooling, and even the parents weren't allowed to teach stuff to their children, which these actions basically has made freedom of speech illegal. With this in mind, and looking at the U.S. today and taking in consideration your novel, Defeating the Totalitarian Lie, how close do you feel the U.S. is to being Nazi-controlled or possibly United China Communist States?
Well, we would be Nazi-controlled with this main, what used to be the main news media, CBS, NBC, the third one, if there would be not the internet and the internet newspapers like WorldNet Daily. I get a lot of my information I get from the out of the internet, and so the so-called main media, the mainstream media, are no more the mainstream media. They are still they are powerful still, and they are, for instance, in these last elections, they are pro Obama, and they make no, they don't even try to hide it anymore. They are part of the government infrastructure, of the government establishment.
And we also have to remember that I remember running across pieces of information, reports that talked about the Internet 2, which is a new Internet that the U.S. Government officials are thinking of setting up, whereby it would be government-controlled. And there's also the head corporations up here in Canada and also down in the United States. They want to start creating packages of the Internet and treating it like cable. So if you want access to news, if you want access to freedom of speech, well, you're going to have to pay extra for that. what the question is, if this stuff does come in effect, and in essence, it basically wipes out our chance to basically speak, communicate in amongst each other, how many days do you figure it's going to be before these few elitists are able to, press their Nazi control right upon us and create the North American Union, or possibly even in Fortress America?
Well, I think I have to admit that I do not know the developments very well in Canada. I have practically no news about it. I do know here that people are slowly getting to realize what Obama and his crowd is up to. So it will, and he knows that it's getting difficult and more difficult all the time, as people realize that all the promises are not really true. Now, how fast, how long that goes? I think here we have this is the last week before the vacations, and I don't think a number of things they wanted to get through they are not getting through. And it's coming from the proper Democratic senators and congressmen, I think, who begin to wonder whether they are on the right side. But how long it takes, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that two of them, two congressmen and senators I'd like to point to would be Dennis Gustanich and Ron Paul, being two people that are really outspoken down there. But up here in Canada, I'd like to briefly explain the history of Canada to you. This nation right here is that we had, right after World War II, we had these doctors appear in Canada that had SS tattoos on them in government experiments against the children. Right, carried out by Canadian government officials. They actually experimented on the children. And there's, I remember one lady talking about how they actually saw the SS tattoo on it. At the same time, we have to remember that the First Nations children were put into residential schools up here where they were forcibly educated by the government, and it was ran by so-called people that claim to be so-called Christians. We're not following what God says. At the same time, so over 50,000 children were killed. Countless others were injured, sexually molested, tortured. The list goes on. Then we also had, sterilization going on here in British province of British Columbia, the province of Alberta, and other provinces within Canada. This country in itself has been a very dark country. And if people realize what the real truth in Canada is, a lot of people say, oh, we're a socialist state. We're not a socialist state. We're a corporate-run country. Our country is actually, we're incorporated down in Washington, D.C. Canada is a corporation. We are no longer a country. And at the same time, we have corporations within there which are not paying their fair share. I'm someone that I'm saying, look, I don't think we should have high taxes. I don't think the people should have to bear the burden. I think the corporations that remove the resources from our land should have to pay a fair share of royalty, should have to pay a fair share of taxes, and that's where the money should come to help the people. And yet that's not happening right now. And what they're doing is they're heavily going after the Canadian people, and then they're allowing these corporations to get away with highway robbery. And that's as brief as I can be with a Canadian history. And yet what happens is you're finding not very many people know about that.
Well, thank you very much. I did not know it. I repeat, I have no information on it. But now I heard what the reality is, I shall look for it.
Well, I learned that history was, when I went down to the United States, I was able to see what Canada really was. I will say one thing, that I'm someone that I believe, I'm a veteran of the Canadian military. I believe that Canada and United States should remain free under their own flags. I do not support globalism in any way. I'm against it 100%. And I basically, what I believe in, I believe that Frederick the Great from Prussia said it best. He said that a nation should worry about itself first. And then what happens is, don't allow another nation to allow it to be an economical dumping ground. Because if you allow it to be an economical dumping ground, what's going to happen is your nation will turn into a shell. And that's what's happening in the United States right now. And especially it's happening up here in Canada. We've not worried about our nation first and then worried about the rest of the world. And what happens is I was taking a trip and living down in the United States for those years where I got my education about what Canada really is and how we should make the changes to help the people.
Well, I have, combining what you have just told me about Canada and what I experienced in Germany, I have come to the conclusion that the reason Germany went down and the Nazis were able to destroy a whole nation practically was godlessness. It was the Nazis were liars. They lied about their ideology was a lie because they believed that there is no God. They also believed, second, that there are people with different values, in other words, with good reputation. The best race is the German one, the Aryans, and then the worst are the Jews. And I think many people got caught up by this. So I'm saying, and then comes the Holocaust, after this philosophy comes the Holocaust with the indifference of these people toward the rights and the lives of other people comes the Holocaust. It is a sequence, the consequence of a form of before it is being thought. There are buildings of thought which led then to the Holocaust. And that was for me the road to find my own moral responsibility, because I realized that I was a liar also. I lied to my parents, I lied at school, I lied everywhere. Later, I lied in the university, I stole, I cheated, and I made a long list of things like that which I had done where I had mistreated other people. And I realized that if every German had lived the way I had lived morally, no wonder that Hitler could manipulate us. So that is, to Germany today, which is no more Nazi, but it is not a God-guided country either. And I can put it the same way I can look at the United States and the same way I can look at Canada. But that gives us, at the same time, a road out of the mess we are in. When everybody has, they say the battle line is between truth and lie, and there's no gray zone in between, and every person, not just in the Western civilization, but every person around the world, has to come to the point where he or she has to make a decision about truth or lie. And there is no, I repeat, there is no gray zone in between. You are either a liar or you stand up for truth. And that is, as far as I'm concerned, the only way I can see that we can get out of the mess in which we are in.
Well, thank you very much for those words, Hilmer. What happens is my tech, Molly, she wants to ask you a quick question. Go ahead, Molly.
Yes. Hi. Yes. Hello, Hilmer. Can you hear me?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I really am fascinated by what you're saying. I'm a parent, and I remember an old adage, you can't lie to a liar, a thief can never own anything, a liar can never believe anything. If you get so habitually, it becomes your personality to lie, which is very interesting to me. How do you fix that? And if history is lying to you, where do you find your measuring stick to tell the truth? Like, what do you... You said the internet is an accurate source for news to you. But as a parent who's competing with what public education is teaching my kids, and then they come home, and what I say doesn't match what they're learning in school, and I'm trying to teach my children to believe themselves, research, and make up their mind and not be a liar. I wonder, after your life of what you've gone through, what you can advise as a parent.
Well, that is, I know then what you, from what you say, what your situation is, which is not easy, I would say. There's no way around it. There's nobody in the world, not one person, who doesn't lie. And some are so much liars that they don't even notice anymore that they are liars. But there's nobody either, I think, who does not know some of his lies. if not all. And there's no other way of making restitution for the damage one has done to whatever other person with one's lie, and then one has to stand up for the truth. And that could cost you nowadays, even in the Western civilization, that cost you your existence, if not your life. Because the godless manager of society, which sits in normal governments, they don't like to hear that, because they know what they are doing. But here in America now, we have at least it with the Tea Party, I don't know whether that you get this in Canada, that goes against the government in, establishment and the taxes they impose on us. And it has already become a mass movement, and they may, or I am also committed to what they are doing, so we could be, I hope that we'll be able to put this government with their trillion-dollar budgets to rest. But what I can say to you more, very difficult. You have just to stick it out. You have to not to lie.
Well, thank you very much, Hilmer. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to go to throw in a musical piece. We're going to be back in about 5 minutes. We ask you to remain on the line there, Hilmer. As Hilmer, yeah. Hilmer von Campe, he's a survivor of the Hitler Youth. This is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger. Welcome back to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger. The date is July 27th, 2009. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. I have as a guest Hilmer von Campe, who is a Hitler Youth, a former Hitler Youth, and also he's a veteran of the Nazi Army from 1943 when he fought on the Eastern Front. Now, with that in mind, Hilmer, in 1943, you were forced to join the Nazi Party and the military. Could you please share with our listening audience what you saw during your time at the front and also how they persuaded you to join the party?
Well, I did not join the party. I signed an application which I was practically ordered to sign. That was about 1 month before I got into the army. And there was a law in Germany that in the armed forces there is no policy, and there can nobody with a political party background can get in there. And that did Hitler not. That he didn't change that. That was still true. That is what I knew. I don't think you have seen my book, from what you ask, Defeating the Totalitarian Lie, because there I have the story about the true story about how World War II began. And I think as an answer to what you asked me, I will put it as short as I can.
Yeah, please
Hitler,
do.
Can I do that?
Yes, you do. Yes, you can. Please do.
Yeah, Hitler put some SS people in Polish uniforms and gave them Polish arms and sent them into Poland. Then they killed a number of people from a nearby concentration camp, put them also in Polish uniforms, and distributed the dead among a number of buildings. And then in the next thing is that he then early in the night, I think it was, the Polish soldiers which were in reality German SS entered Germany, shot in the air, made terrible noise, and disappeared again. And then Hitler in the next morning in Berlin said that Germany had been attacked by the Polish army, and now we were shooting back. That was, and then World War II began. So that was based on a lie. And then 2 days later, the French and the British government declared war on Germany because they had a treaty with Poland. They had refused to listen to the German intelligence. The head of the military intelligence, an admiral, Canaris, he was against Hitler, and he wanted to inform the British about what's coming up in Poland, and the British government didn't want to hear it. Now, I heard the speech of Hitler, when he declared war, and then I was also, I heard that when the British and French declared war on us, and we thought, I thought, these are the same enemies from World War One. They have once destroyed our country, but we will not give them the second chance. And therefore, we came to the conclusion, this war is not a Nazi war, it is a German war. We must first win the war, and then we can deal with the Nazis. And that is the way where I practically voluntarily, I was drafted, but I would have gone voluntarily also, because I wanted to defend my fatherland. And there were millions of soldiers who went for the same reason. And if Hitler would have tried to make us into Nazis, I don't think we would have, he could have lost a great part of the army, and especially of the officers, generals.
And also, like right after the war was finished, your unit surrendered to the Soviet Union. Could you tell us a little bit about your trip you took back and how you were captured by the Soviets, imprisoned, and how you were able to escape and then return back to German soil?
Yeah, we had. I was in Yugoslavia, and we were fighting the Soviet army. There was the Yugoslavians, that is the Croats and the Serbs. Basically, the Serbs, they were the main body of Tito, the communist Tito, and Tito soldiers. We have never fought with them. They never appeared. They were the Yugoslavian armed forces at that time, and the German high command and the Soviet high command made an agreement that we can give our arms and go home, which we did, but we couldn't go home. We had to go back, and we were not prisoners of war from the Soviet army, but we were prisoners of war from the partisans, we called them, from the Yugoslavian. And we had to clear woods and rebuild houses and things like that. And all the details I have in my book, Defeating the Totalitarian Lie. And then came the autumn, and I realized that I most likely would not survive the winter. We had very little food and nothing to no clothing. And I decided to escape. And there were four others who made the same decision, and five of us went out of our camp late in the night and went northeast. That was the direction. We wanted to go to Hungary, from there to Austria. And in Austria was the demarcation line between the Soviet armed forces and the British occupation army. And to cross that border, that was border number three or four, that was then on the other side. We were in the world of freedom, and already we walked at night, and then we ran into a patrol, and we heard the shooting, and we realized that our front man, who had the map, had run into a patrol. I was number two. Everybody rushed into the darkness. We encountered ourselves, and then we went. We had no more map, and then we went for the North Star. And already in the first or second night, we didn't find. We went and at night, and in the morning we went and hid somewhere in a forest or where we found something, and then at night we continued walking. And I was lying in a bush. There was no forest in the bush. Then came a man with a dog, and the dog pulled his boss to where I was, and the others also. And I looked into the face of the man, and looked into the face of the dog, and the man looked at me. He didn't say a word, and then he disappeared. And I thought, now he's going to come back with soldiers. He did not come back, so he wasn't a communist. And so we continued. We came. We had to cross a border. We had to cross two borders, rivers. Was very cold. I didn't want to swim through the water. And believe it or not, where we hit the first water river, there was a boat underwater, which we could easily lift and cross the river. And then we realized that we were still in Yugoslavia. And two days late, nights later, we came to the main river, and again, where we hit the river, there was a boat waiting for us, this time tied to a tree, and we could, with that boat, cross the border, and we were in Hungary, where our friends, and they gave us, we went to a farm, and we got, for the first time in half a year, we got something decent to eat. And then we continued at nights, and one night, I was alone by that time. I found no house, and very late, when it was only a day, and apparently somebody had watched that. Anyway, there were two women in that house. We were still two. And there were two women, they gave us to eat, and then they put us up in the stable to sleep, and we hadn't even laid down when they came rushing back and were shouting that the soldiers are coming after us. And I could see them coming in the horizon with a dog who's barking, they're shooting in the air. We ran away into some bushes nearby over a field which was recently plowed, and you could see every step in that underground. And I lost some papers which were lying around on there. So then I saw the soldiers enter the farm. They picked up my cap, which was fallen down when I rushed away, and they were shooting in the air, and then they turned the back on us and went into opposite direction and disappeared. There was absolutely no explanation for how such a thing is possible. I had thought that was now the end of my escape. And we had some more of these. At the end, I was alone. And Hungarian took me over the border into Austria. And then I came to the border. And I crossed. There was also a miracle. There was a small bridge which behind the village where there was the frontier. And I was told if I get there early, there is no soldier, so I have to get there early, and then I can just cross over into the British-occupied Austrian zone. And when I was very close to the bridge, there came a Soviet soldier with his arm towards me, with his arms. And I thought now it's in the last 100 meters should I be grabbed back into this slavitude. But then there was a farmer to the side with a little path which led to the house. I went in this path. I pretended I knocked the door of this farm, which I did not do, and the soldier didn't even look at me. He disappeared, and I crossed the border, and I was in freedom, and I realized that I had what I set out, I had accomplished. And when I then thought about it, I saw the British soldiers and the Austrian farmers in that village where I had crossed, and it occurred to me that was God who had taken me out of prisonership in Yugoslavia. And if it was, he was my second thought, then he must have a purpose for me. And that is the reason why I'm still here, sitting here and answer your questions, because I do have a purpose, and my purpose is to make the first purpose now is to have America to become a nation under God, not by words, but by acts. And that is what I'm committed to make America what it needs to be, a nation under God. Because America has a mission of freedom for everybody in the world, but you can't have freedom with liars. Lasting freedom is only possible with truth. And therefore, what I said earlier, we need Americans and an American nation, which is a nation under God, stands and fights for truth and brings freedom to the last corner of the earth.
Yeah, that's so true there, Hilmer, that you know, what you went through was just amazing. And yeah, I do agree that there had to be a higher being that was guiding you. And when I basically researched your stuff on the internet, I remember them, they had this one piece up where you're following the Northern Light during nighttime because you, like you're saying, you lost, the gentleman got caught that had the map. Now, yeah. With all that in mind, we have to remember that Obama /Bush prior to him has had czars. They put czars that are controlling the economy and everything within the United States. A lot of different presidents have had this. However, it's been Bush and Obama who's had the most. Obama being, I think Obama has 30 now, and Bush had, I think 10. And what this is, it's a secret government, and it basically operates outside of the government. But so it's almost like they're preparing it for the next level sort of thing with its North American Union slash Fortress America slash Nazi control slash United Chinese Communist States, and the list goes on and on. Now, what I'd like to ask, what I'd like to get the question to is, I remember when I did some research in Germany that they had gun control, which the Nazis basically enforced even further when they came into power. Now, with that in mind, do you feel that if there was no gun control, and let's say the Jewish and the Gypsies and other minorities would have had access to guns like the United States has right now with a Second Amendment, you know, do you feel that Hitler could have been stopped?
No. The German mentality is very different from the American character and philosophy. Here, Americans, and I think in Canada it's similar, it's the government, it's the people who are supposed to run things, and the government is a service of the people. And because the government has become the master of the people, we have now various movements to put them out of power. That would have been very impossible in Germany. My father had a revolver in his desk and so forth. But the only ones who could have changed or eliminated Hitler were the armed forces. And there was a conspiracy to kill Hitler, and they even got into his bunker. I don't know where he had his headquarters, and detonated a bomb. And unfortunately, there was a table between the bomb and Hitler, and Hitler got out alive, and that was the end of the... And all the Hitler killed hundreds of people who were involved in that, even the field marshal. So I don't think the German citizen had neither the spirit nor the possibility to liquidate the Nazis.
And with the United States...
As I describe in my book, I say again, defeating the totalitarian lie, I have many details in there about the mentality of the difference between the German and the American mentality.
And I do apologize about interrupting you earlier. With the United States at this time, there's been an awful lot of talk about possibly the Obama administration trying to bring in gun control and everything. Now, I'm someone who I believe that everyone should have the right to bear and keep arms. But sadly, our nation here of Canada has gun control in effect, which allows the police to enter into your residency without a search warrant. And all it takes is a phone call from someone you know, or could be a neighbor or someone, to the police saying we have unregistered weapons in our place. Next thing you know, the police are showing up without a search warrant. They find anything illegal, you're going to jail. Now, so I was someone that basically wants to get rid of that gun control because I believe that everyone should have the right to protect themselves. Now, with the Obama administration right now trying to bring in a gun control, do you feel that if this does come into effect, could you see what's happening within Nazi Germany of your past? Could you see it happening, the exact same thing happening within United States with the Give Act and everything else, and the brown shirts start connecting, the new Hitler Youth connect, you know, being created, and sort of like the Obama turning into the Führer?
Well, I think Obama has already now encountered quite some resistance from his own people about this. I think people realize that he promises things which he doesn't keep. And I know from the comments and the newspapers and so forth, was the last months there were record sales of weapons to American people. In other words, the Americans are arming themselves to defend themselves, not to attack the government, but to defend themselves if it comes to it. And they are on the move now. I repeat, we have the Tea Party, which is not a political party, but a movement to stop the Obama administration to incur these extraordinary debts, which we can't never pay back. That is an attempt to put America into the red, but tremendously to liquidate the America. That is what is the reason would be to destroy the American as a national nation with world power. We would be powerless. We would be trying to survive, each one of us, if that would happen.
And also,
so I think the American people are different from the German people, and I trust that they will fight.
And you have the you founded the National Institute for Truth and Freedom, which you have on your website. You've
yes.
also written numerous other novels. We only have a couple minutes left, and could you talk briefly about your institution and articles that are put out through there, and where people can go to check it out?
Yeah, I have, for instance, I'm speaking to audiences, and I offer all with my books. I have written 6 books. And the ones which I sell right now, which are available, is Defeating the Totalitarian Lie and is Connecting with the Power of God. And most people buy the two when I finish speaking. My theme is the global ideological battle is about the role of God in human society. The Nazis and your Canadians, whoever makes these laws, they are godless. Germany went down to be godless because we were godless. And godlessness is a problem in America and in Canada and in all Western nations, not to speak of the rest of the world. So therefore, that is my... And there I say it's come. Change, you don't change the others. You start change with yourself. Now, my books, before I am out of time... You can get on my website, which is www.vonkampe.com. Right, you might be producing that in good English. I don't know whether I am understood. Or you can also get it via WorldNet Daily. I doubt that your bookshelves have that book, but you could try also. But in my website, you get the book with my... signature.
Also, you basically you're right afterwards. You spent your whole entire life trying to atone for the crimes that were done by the German people against the Jewish and non-Jewish during the Holocaust. And what happens is, reading through your stuff, you are truly. To me, I feel that you have been someone who's been a bright, shining light, to use an example that people should use to try to carry out, to live their own lives, and how to overcome past atrocities that they've had to face in their own life. And, you know, with this said, we only have about maybe a minute left. There's so many more things that I could talk about that you've gone through, but could you quickly talk about, you spent a couple years living in Latin America and knowing that, meeting presidents, meeting student leaders, meeting unions, meeting priests, meeting everyone. What is the one thing that we have to do in order to create a better world for all people in Latin America and Canada and the United States? About a minute left, if you could, Hilmer.
Yeah, I have spent most of my adult life before I came to the United States 20 years ago. I was in Latin America. And I think it is just our governments don't do work with the South Americans as they should. I don't know in details what they should do, but the Chinese come in, the Soviets come in, and they want, and they are now, all the nations in Latin America, in South America, are Marxist or communist. So that has to be changed, and we have to rebuild our societies, that our societies are better than any other society if we live the life. In other words, it depends on each one. Not to ask what can little me do, but little me can stand up for truth. That is the only way we can change the world, beginning with ourselves and not with the other side, others.
Well, I totally agree with that, Hilmer. I mean, basically, JFK said it best, ask not what your country can do for you, but you could do for your country. And I'd like to, as I have done this in the past and modernizing it, ask not what the world can do for you, but you can do for the world to make a better life for all people. Be your brother and sister keeper, the best way I look at it. And it looks like we just ran out of time. So we thank you so much for coming on, Hilmer. We'll have to get you back on in the future because there's still so much more that I could cover with you. Looking through your website, you're basically about a two-hour show, just barely touching on everything you've done. And thank you so much for being that bright shining light for everyone to look at. Your website is hilmervonkampe.com. This Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. Thank you again, Hilmer.
Anytime I come back, you want to.